With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need.
Marketing wizards?
Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
You're listening to Family Feud, part of the Paris Style podcast family. They might not be brother and sister, but they sure do fight like they are. Here's your hosts, Keely Yore and Shotgun Spratling.
Welcome to another episode of the Family Feud podcast. I'm your host, Keely Yore, joined by Shotgun Spratling and cousin of the pod, Chris Trevino. We good show for you guys today. We're talking USC Notre Dame. Good show, bad game? Question mark? We were at Southfin, though, so that was fun. Always fun covering a game there. So we'll get into some stock up, stock down. We'll answer your questions. And we have a special take or leave it from Chrissy T today, so we'll get into all of that.
Whoa, special one.
I don't know if it's special. She just said that.
I did not.
Chris is trying to hype you up.
Chris is like, I didn't even know it was special, but all right.
Yeah, she just said that.
I'm trying to hype you up. Go with it.
Leave me alone.
As a reminder, if you have questions or submissions for the pod, email us at familyfeudpod@gmail.com or look out for a tweet from Shotgun Spratling on Tuesdays. That's when we record. But guys, like I said, another loss to cover for USC. Not the greatest of seasons for the Trojans, but we truck on. We still do our jobs, even though some people in our mentions are like, why are you covering this? It's our job, so we're doing it. Shoddy, we went to South Bend. That was fun.
Yeah, South Bend's always fun. It's a great atmosphere. You know, it's just unfortunate that the rivalry hasn't been the high stakes that it has been in the past. You know, it feels like for the last decade or so, one team or another is good. And one or two years where neither team was great either. But, you know, a lot of times it's been one team ranked and the other team not. And that's unfortunate that you're not having those classic games that you see on all the films when you know, or the highlight reel that they start the game with the push and those type of games. So that's unfortunate, and you hope the rivalry gets back to that where both teams are top 15 teams and they're competing and the game really means something on the national landscape. It's a primetime game every time it's in South Bend, but you would hope that it's primetime and everyone wants to view it because of what it means on the national picture and what it means for the college football playoff going forward, but that hasn't been the case recently.
Chrissy T, I know you got to watch this game from home. What was that experience like for you?
You know, it was a game that I felt that I was tempted to pick USC to win this game just because I wanted to see if the whole road team mentality came out against, you know, a better opponent than it has been against Colorado or Washington State. And, you know, I think they did look a lot better than they have in these last three games at the Coliseum. They did look a little more focused, and it was a game they absolutely could have left South Bend with a win. It was a one-score game in the second half, but then, you know, just those same issues that have come up with finishing stuff, you know, getting in the red zone, punching it in the red zone, you know, clock management issues, all these little things came up again, and, you know, it is what it is. Defense let them down at the end, gave up that score. You know, just another a continuation of all the problems we've seen, but a little bit closer on the road. They are a better road team, I will say that overall.
Which doesn't really make much sense, but
doesn't really make much sense because you still lost.
Yep. And you said the defense let them down at the end of the game. The offense let them down for 2.5 quarters, not doing anything.
It was their turn to hold the water.
Yeah. So it's, you know, special teams let them down, miss field goal, miss extra point. It was a complete team effort. You know, just to jump right in to stock up, stock down, my stock up is missed opportunities. Just more and more. There was so many opportunities in this game where, hey, it's 3rd and 1 on that first drive. You hit the running back in the backfield 3 yards deep, but you can't make the tackle. Drive continues. All these small things that add up when you look at it. And you know, the coaches look at it and they go, oh, we were so close. And the fans look at it and go, no, you weren't. You were so far away. But at the same time, they are so close. If they could clean things up, this team still could play so much better, and they could challenge. You know, this is a top 15 team they're playing against Notre Dame. And I don't think this Notre Dame team is that great, but it was winnable. It was a winnable game. There was opportunities there for USC to make big plays, and they don't make them. Whether it's a missed tackle, whether it's, you know, a third and 10 play, the opening drive of the second half, good throw from Keaton Slovis hits Malcolm Epps in the shoulder pad. Now, that's a tough catch. There's in between two defenders, but those are the type plays that USC is just not making. When they have opportunities to make a big-time play, it's not being made. Whether it's the offensive line missing a block, where somebody not making a catch, whatever it may be, everyone, it's across the board. It's not just the offense, not just the defense, not the coordinators. It's everyone. It's the players, the coordinators, the head coach, the clock management, every small thing. USC is just not answering the bell when it comes to those small details.
Given the season that we've seen from USC so far, do you think a loss like this is more frustrating for fans? Because you're playing a beatable Notre Dame team in South Bend. You had opportunities that, like you just said, Chuck, and you missed, versus a blowout loss that's historic in the Coliseum. I know that hurts as well for fans, but at least you kind of know for a while that that's coming in the game, versus this, you had your opportunities.
I mean, I always felt when I was playing that, you know, in any sport, that the games are really close. Those are the ones that are much more heartbreaking and frustrating than the ones where you just get blown out. Hey, they were just better than us. They blew us out. We didn't have a good game plan, whatever it may be. Whereas when you're close, you think about that one play you missed, that one block you missed, that one shot, the one free throw you didn't make. You know, you think of all those things, the small things, and those eat at you so much more. And as a fan, I think it's probably the same way as well. The ones where you feel like, if we just did this, we just did this, it's a completely different game. And USC had plenty of opportunities to do that. There were so many chances where you make one play and suddenly it's a one-possession game way before the fourth quarter. But they just never made those plays along the way. And when they do get a couple scores in the fourth quarter and you go, okay, now we need the defense to make a stop, and they get a couple of penalties, that one of them a terrible penalty, unsportsmanlike conduct, that, you know, really pushes Notre Dame into field goal range already, which is terrible for you because you need a stop. You need a shutdown, and they can't get it.
Yeah. I had stuck up for Keontae Ingram. I thought he took another step this week, 24 carries for 138 yards and a touchdown. He was worried about the cold weather, but it looked like that was fine for him. Also, stuck down for NBC for taking Chris's photo.
Why are you stepping on my herd?
Oh, sorry. That's okay. Never mind. I didn't say anything.
So rude.
But stuck up for him. I mean, I think we can see that he's become the number one back for USC in that sense, and he's playing well. So stuck up for him.
Yeah, he was terrific. A number of plays where there wasn't anything, that he created something. Yeah. And then when there was some space, you know, he turned it into some big runs. You know, there were some 15, 20, 25-yard runs in there, which is something USC hasn't been consistently getting. I thought their blocking on the second level was much better this game, both in the screen game and for Keontae Ingram. When they gave him an opportunity, he made the most of it and picked up some tough yards at times. And, you know, when they went to the run game, the offense just it looked so much different than when they started the game with three straight passes and, you know, three and out with a sack and a near sack. The run game is the key to the offense, in my opinion. I think it's been the case all season. And when they rely on it, the more they rely on it, the better the offense has been.
Also, props to him for film study, because I asked him, like, you looked really patient once you got the ball in your hands. And he said, I noticed on film that they would stunt immediately. And so I would kind of wait for that trash to clear and then see where I could find my opening. So I thought that was interesting as well, because you could definitely see that in the second half. He was getting very patient. And I think that's why he also had success on Saturday.
Yeah, they ran a lot of inside zone this game, which is something they haven't done a ton of. They've run much more outside zone. So they ran a bunch of inside zone, and he was kind of being patient, picking his spots. And the offense, the interior linemen were given a little bit of push to get him a couple yards before contact. And then when they did pop an outside zone in, it went for like 20-something yards because they got outside of Notre Dame and was able to get some green grass and a really nice block from Taj Washington on the particular play I'm speaking of. So they did some nice things in the run game, both inside and outside. Can they build on it? That's the question. And will they actually use the run game as much as they can?
Yeah. Chrissy G.
All I can say about Keontae is that he's just so much fun to watch run. You know, whether he's like throwing in a little spin move or just putting his head down, just running hard. It's just that's one big thing I took away from watching some of USC's offense from the broadcast, is just he's running really well. And he's like, USC's been struggling so much. I don't think people are realizing how well he's playing right now.
Mm-hmm.
So that is disappointing, but it's nice that we can give him some love on this show. And he's a great interview.
He is. Very fun.
Maybe the brightest spot on the offense when it comes to interviews.
Wow. Huh.
Yeah. That's I think that's pretty easy, actually.
Take it or leave it.
I'll take it.
Take it.
I guess stock down? Oh, wait. Chris, did you have something? Oh, yeah. You didn't even go. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about, I feel like we go through the same stocks up and down every week.
Because it's the same, every like, week, game,
Drake
pretty
London,
much.
Drake, we know he's very good at football. So
Why are you wiping your arms right now?
I don't know. I have no energy. I just need to try to inject it
in
myself.
You were like, Keontae is so fun to watch. Like, in the most, like, monotone voice.
My voice is very shot, so I sound a lot sexier today, actually. I kind of like it.
Debatable, but continue.
Welcome back to Family Feud Radio. We'll be taking your calls. Fellas, you got lady problems? Call us at me in shotgun. Helium Boys Love Line. We'll give you advice.
Someone got a good point.
Yeah, got a good point. We've been through it all, seen it all, so we can help you in your darkest hour of need. Sorry, that was a little sidetracked. But I went a little bit off the grid with mine, with this, because we only get one. So I just wanted to throw something out
there. We're having a minimized stockage.
Stock up for me is the two QB system. You know, your fans were watching this, USC fans were watching this game and watching a Notre Dame team use this QB system that could reflect what maybe USC will move towards. You have the veteran, Jack Cohn, who is the starter, but then you have a talented runner-type freshman in Ty Buchanan coming in and, you know, giving some spot play, giving some packages, and I think that is obviously where Jackson Dart was probably leaning towards for Washington State before he, you know, had to come in and play a full game and injured his knee doing all that, but maybe that's kind of the blueprint we'll see moving forward, because obviously it kind of worked on the other side. Both of them got touchdowns. I think Ty played really well. My voice is giving out right now, so I'm just going to stop talking.
Okay.
What's interesting is that they actually have a three-quarterback system prior to the USC game. They've been mixing in Drew Pike, I believe it was.
Pine.
It is a third guy, which is unheard of, basically, for a top 15 team to be mixing in three quarterbacks like that. But against USC, I think they streamlined it a little bit, and it seemed like from listening to some of the Notre Dame sites and reading some stuff, it seemed like they streamlined it, and I think it worked really well. And Buckner played with more confidence than what he had in the past. You know, he had the longest throw that they had for the game was a 15-yard throw to Michael Mayer, which was from Buckner in the middle of USC's zone. So it's interesting that they changed some things. They made a lot of adjustments in the bye week that really worked for them. You know, they got the ball out quicker, you know, a lot of short passes. They tried to attack down the field vertically, which is what they've been doing all season, but it was much more the quick passes, and against USC zone, Cohn was able to find Michael Mayer several times. So I thought that what they did with those two quarterbacks was really smart and worked out really well for them.
And to your point, Shotgun, that you said on Tunnel Vision, Notre Dame used their bye week well in that sense.
Yeah, and going back and looking through the film, and I said, you know, asked Keeley and Ryan on Tunnel Vision, did you notice anything really different from USC? When I went and back and watched it more, you know, dissected a little bit more, there were some significant differences for USC. Unfortunately for USC, those didn't pay off a lot like Notre Dame's did. So you don't notice them as much when they don't pay off. So
can we get an example?
I mean, the 3-2-6 dime, I mean, when you're coming in, and that's something they've used a little bit against Washington State, but that's, when you think of Notre Dame, you think of a downhill running team. 3-2-6, you know, starting with three down linemen, that seems a little bit strange. And six, you know, putting four safeties on the field. But it's something that worked for them early until Notre Dame, Notre Dame wasn't able to run against it early. But then Notre Dame really put an emphasis on being downhill. And that's when, on the second drive, USC called a timeout. It was like, let's scrap this. Let's go to four down linemen. And they kind of changed the way they progressed from there. But that was one of the things. They did some other things. There were some wrinkles on the offensive side. You know, the fake screen to Eric Cromanhook. You know, him faking that he was going to block for the wide receiver screen. And just the attention that Drake London continues to get is opening up things. And that's another thing there. There was a couple double moves that USC did on the offense that were something they had worked on during the bye week. Drake London, the longest catch he's had all season, I think it was 46 yards or something to start one of those drives, was a double move. So there were some wrinkles in there that were new. It just, you know, what Notre Dame did worked really well for them, and USC showed up in pieces, whereas Notre Dame's was pretty consistent for them.
Alrighty, let's move on to stock down.
Can I at least list my other ones?
Go.
The young guys. I mean, Jalen Smith, Kyle Ford, Prophet Brown, Ishmael Sopshur getting his first playing time. Those guys all got extra, more opportunities than they had previously, and maybe that comes directly from that young guy scrimmage they talked about. But those four guys I had on there as well, and the last one I had was wasted timeouts. Stock up on those because there were multiple of those.
A good old Chrissy T.
He doesn't get negative credit for just being the only one. I've done this for years now.
Oh, you don't like people taking credit for something you've done for years. Yeah. Interesting, yeah. Shotty.
Yeah.
Alrighty, stock down. What you got? Chrissy T, I'm going to you first. Hopefully your voice has recovered.
It's not, but here we are, me talking into the microphone. You know, just something that has a unit that's popped on and off this stock up, stock down. You know, the offensive line did not have a great game, particularly that right side. Slovis was under duress early in the game, affected a lot of his passing. You know, you guys talked to McGuire. I believe you talked to McGuire. Just said mm-hmm. it wasn't good enough, and it wasn't good enough. You need to protect Keaton, who had moments in this game, but you needed to protect him a little bit better if you wanted to walk out of that game with a win, and that didn't happen. So I got to put on offensive line for stock down.
Yeah, I think Jonah Monheim is a big part of that. He got benched basically after the first two drives, and USC. Third and long situations, Notre Dame was consistently bringing pressure, and USC didn't handle it very well. Now, some of those, you know, when you're third and eight, you're third and 11, which were the two situations where USC was in the red zone, trying to go to Malcolm Epps both times. One of them turns into an interception. The other one is a high throw because Keaton Slovis gets hit. Both times, if you get a tenth, maybe two-tenths of a second more, one of them is probably, you know, one of them may be a completion, you know, the high throw to Epps, see what happens there on that one. The other one, the interception, Epps is open. That could be a touchdown. And that's a 10-point swing there. Now, good job by the defense to sudden change, be able to stop them in the red zone after that interception runs down to the five, and give credit to Keaton Slovis for hustling down and making that tackle.
Yeah.
But that's 7 points potentially for USC. That's tying the game early instead of giving points away and suddenly being down by two scores, you know, when you're in the red zone and think you have a chance. And it was that much extra time is what they needed. They struggled with the stunts that Notre Dame did against them. You know, they really attacked the guards at times with their stunts, with the defensive ends really hit. Like on the interception, Liam Jimmins gets knocked off his feet from the defensive end coming inside. I don't know if it's communication. I don't know exactly what needed to be fixed there, but they did not handle those stunts well. And it showed up particularly in those third and long situations. When the offensive line gave Slovis time, USC picked apart Notre Dame's defense for the most part. So it comes back to them. I mean, that's always the key on the offense is, you know, the offensive line giving the quarterback time and creating some running lanes. And they did a pretty good job in the run game. But in the pass game, those sacks, you know, were crucial. You had one to begin a first and 10 inside the red zone. You had the one to start the game, and you had the big one that created the interception, which I don't even think they got credit for a sack on that one. But so, and then the final one at the end of the game. So it's just those were huge plays, each one of them. And, you know, that always comes back to the offensive line.
Also, I should specify pass pro, yes.
Yeah.
Also, audible stock down for just offensive line penalties in crucial situations as well.
Yep. Several of those just backed them up when you go from third and two to third and seven. At one point you go and then you pick up that first down. A couple plays later it's first and 15, and then that becomes that third and 11 that they don't convert to Malcolm Epps. But the biggest one was the holding penalty on Brett Nealon on that final drive that USC had. And, you know, when I asked Clay McGuire about the penalties, he said, yeah, the false starts, you know, that's communication. We got to get that cleaned up. He didn't fault Brett Nealon as much for that. He said he's just striving to finish the block right there. He said he's just got to let him go when he gets outside of him like that. But he, you know, it's one of those effort plays that, you know, sometimes it comes back to bite you when you tried a little bit too hard on something. And, you know, that would have been a big play because that would have been a first down. Instead, you're backed up. Now it's like second and 14 or something. They negative play on the next play, and it just all falls apart from there.
Now, I know this is like calling on memories that feel like 9 years ago, but I know that USC, and specifically talking to some of the linemen and Clay McGuire, they really struggled with the stunts that Oregon State did, I believe. How did that compare to what Notre Dame did?
it's hard to say necessarily until talking to those offensive linemen and, you know, after they see the tape and see what they – was it communication? Was it them just not getting their head around? Was Notre Dame confusing them? You know, that's something that we'll be asking today with some of those offensive linemen is, you know, what exactly happened on those? Just off the top of my head, I couldn't necessarily tell a huge difference there. It's just, you know, Notre Dame did a really good job of those defensive ends coming in and being low and driving into the interior linemen to create that space and then either, you know, being able to come off that and go get the quarterback themselves or creating that loop around for the defensive tackle to go make a play.
Yeah. So I had stocked down for chemistry between Keaton Slovis and Dante Williams because this was something that I noticed during the game, but then it also stood out to me when I did the rewatch of the broadcast. In person, I noticed, you know, that last play that the 4th and 22 or whatever that USC had coming off the field, Dante was just all up in Keaton's face and was like basically saying, and I asked Keaton after the game, like, you should have gotten the ball off sooner, stuff like that. And Keaton just kind of shrugged his shoulders and shook his head, like, I don't know what to do here. And then we heard from Dante after the game. He suggested that he wanted Keaton to spike the ball prior to the end of the first half, and he didn't. And then on the broadcast, you can actually see Dante kind of chirping at him to do that, and Keaton kind of walks away a little bit. Like, he doesn't really pay attention to that. And I think, in my mind, it kind of goes back to how odd the quarterback situation has been handled since Dante Williams became interim head coach, given the whole Jackson Dart situation. Like, we never heard Dante say, and like we have, but not as definite, I think, as you probably would for your third-year starter. Like, Keaton Slovis is our guy. He's our starter. When Jackson Dart comes back, like, we'll see you. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think he's gotten the support from Dante that maybe you would expect. And I don't know if that's just because Dante's a defensive coach. It's not like a Clay Helton thing where he really stumped for the quarterbacks and protected them publicly. I don't know. But just I sense a growing tension there, and I just stuck down for that.
So when I watched the broadcast, it doesn't seem like the end of the first half that Dante Williams is chirping at Keaton Slovis. To me, it looks like it's at Stanton Keen, who is the guy who's calling in the plays, who gets the call from Graham Harrell and signals in the plays. And when you watch Keaton Slovis when he first comes off the field.
Is that who he's talking to?
I believe that's who he's talking to. And when Keaton comes off the field, he's talking to Stanton there. And he's making some motion with his hands about, you know, it seemed like, you know, the call, whether he got the right call, there's a miscommunication. I don't know. But Dante's like waiting around and he looks at Keaton, but it seems like he's yelling more at the person who was signaling the calls in.
Okay.
And, you know, I think Keaton, because he's not yelling at him, I think Keaton just kind of jogs off and goes to the locker room because Dante continues yelling after Keaton's already passed, you know, has gone out of the frame of the shot that they have. So I think there is an issue there. Obviously, there was a miscommunication somewhere.
Yeah.
Dante wanted the ball spiked after the run. And Dante's talked about this last night on Trojans Live. He said, I didn't have a problem with the first down run, which a lot of people looked at and like, why are you running the ball with 30 seconds left after they picked up the 4th and 2? And he said, I didn't have a problem with it because it got us into field goal range. And he's absolutely correct. It was a 6-yard run. It turns it into like a 47-yard field goal versus a 53, 54-yard field goal. So, but if you spike it then, and I went back and looked at it, if you spike it, get everybody to the line and spike it, you have about 13 to 15 seconds. So in that time, you're at the, I believe it was a 31-yard line somewhere right there. You have an opportunity to do a couple different things. You can take that shot to the end zone, which they end up trying to do on that play when they don't spike it. And there's a big issue. Drew Brees talks about it on the broadcast. Big issue is, if you're in that situation, why are you not looking to Drake London? And he ends up being wide open on the play. But he's the guy you got to be looking at. Now, you may look to the right side to try to move the safety or whatever, but you come back to Drake London and say, let me throw it up to him. If it goes out of bounds, if I throw it too high or whatever, or if he doesn't catch it, then we have it stops the clock. You live to fight another day. But if you spike it, you have that option. You can do that. You can run the same exact play, and hopefully you throw it instead of trying to run it. But you also have the option of running, you know, a 6-8 yard out and getting a closer field goal instead of being a 47-yarder. Now you're 38-yarder or something like that. So I think there was just more options. But again, it all comes back even before all that, timeout usage. You know, two timeouts wasted on defense. One of them was, you know, they came out with their 3-2-6. It wasn't working. We're going to change things. Okay. The other one was miscommunication, getting people on the field. That one's a wasted timeout because you're just not getting the right subs in. And then they take a timeout before the 4th-and-2. Now, the reason why they took it, and what I believe was Keaton said, was they just didn't like the look that they had from the sideline. And he's looking to the sideline like, are we going to run this play? Are we going to run this play? What are we doing? And eventually they call the timeout. But how beneficial would it have been to have that timeout? You know, yeah. So, you know, you need to pick up the 4th-and-2. So I understand taking a timeout there, but it's just not a good usage of all three timeouts in that half. And, you know, if you have that extra timeout, you can come to the sideline and say, okay, what do we want to run and figure out, you know, to throw the ball to Drake London. That's what you want to run.
All I got to say on that is Dante hasn't kissed him.
Oh, my goodness.
This is true.
What?
That we've seen.
That we've seen.
Yeah.
That's all I got to say.
Okay.
The wrong way kissed another man. Shotgun, come here.
Stay away from me, Chris.
Shoddy, have you done Stock Down?
I have not. My Stock Down is thriving in the limelight because USC and you go back to the Pete Carroll era and everyone, obviously that's the most recent golden age for USC. What did USC do so well? Whenever there's a big game, they got up for it and they played great, right? When they struggled was, oh, we got to go to Oregon State. You know, who's watching this game? It's at 10 p.m. on the East Coast. Is anyone paying it? Those were the games where they struggled, not the big games. USC, though, recently in the big games, they just haven't performed. You know, they played down to their competition at times, and then when they've had a chance to play up to someone else, they're just not making those plays. So thriving in the limelight, especially this game, obviously it's always going to have a national – it's going to be on a national stage, and people are going to pay attention to it because it's the, you know, one of the best rivalries in college football.
But also just stock down for that, considering that game day went to UCLA Oregon on USC Notre Dame weekend.
Yeah, UCLA Oregon actually has college football playoff impact, though, I think.
I'm just saying, like, in an ideal situation, the USC Notre Dame game would.
True.
So.
But it hasn't recently, so.
Nope. Not at all. Shoddy, I'm want to move on, but this is usually when you go, wait, I want to say this and that. So go for it.
I mean, the last one that I had was end of half execution, which we talked about. So, I mean, it's interesting how well USC performed last year at the end of games, coming back in that Arizona State and the Arizona games at the UCLA game. And they did not look very good, that final drive. And it was an interesting drive because it was 4 minutes to go and they were running the ball. So they're kind of taking the clock away so that if Notre Dame did get the ball back, but they never got like the 15, 20-yard chunk play to really get them in position to be like, okay, we're going to score on this drive, so we got to save time. So it was always kind of an in-between. And then, you know, the last minute, they just did not do well with the clock management.
All righty, let's move on to some questions that we have. First one is from USC Twitter, who says, how long will Ben Griffith stick around?
I mean, Ben is an older man. He's a wise man. Got married recently.
Yeah.
During the old bi-week marriage.
The old bi-week marriage. You know, maybe, you know, he's ready to move on, make his next chapter in his life. Go on to other things. What?
I don't know. The way you're talking about this sounds like it's like a storybook.
Why can't it be a storybook? I bet it was a storybook wedding.
Sure.
The answer is forever. No one gets that reference?
Yeah, I do. That's a movie reference that I do know.
Oh,
thank
wow.
you very much.
That'd be The Sandlot there for anyone who doesn't get it. Yeah, I mean, the way he's punted this year, I think he's ready to go pro. So I think this is probably the last year. Now, you don't often see punters leaving early, but you also don't often see 30-year-olds playing college football.
Also, I am not legally allowed to talk about this, but someone might have, against Utah, had a 71-yard punt that I didn't mention, but I just am saying that someone did have
someone
that.
Did, yeah.
Someone did have did. That, and I am just saying it. We got a question from, or kind of a suggestion, I don't know.
His two punts in this game were two punts for 99 yards, 49.5 average. One of them did go into the end zone for a touchback, but that was on the coverage unit.
Yeah.
That was a great punt
yes.
inside the 5-yard line. They had plenty of hang time. two terrific punts once again. So he's been really, really good. We don't talk about it, of course, because Keeley's not allowed to.
No.
But he's been really, really good this season, and you know, we're actually seeing the booming punts that we had anticipated a couple years ago.
Maybe it's because I'm not talking about it. He can finally shine.
Oh,
true.
It's all you.
I'm the curse. Doug says, stock up or down on Keaton Slovis transferring next year to improve his draft status. USC has destroyed his status, but he might have a chance for better film at a different school. Also, he is plenty fast enough, and then he references the interception tackle, to run a bootleg or delayed keeper. And that's a question that we've gotten from other people at different times. What does USC do with Keaton Slovis, and what does Keaton Slovis do after the season?
I mean, just answering that question, sorry, I just bit my mouth. I would say, so if you listen to that, it comes out weird. That's because of that. I would say stock up on that. I mean, that seems to be the way of college football now, especially for a quarterback. You know, look at Spencer Rattler at Oklahoma. You know, that's a similar situation where their stock has really taken a downturn. They're not really playing well in their junior years. You know, it might be time to reset, refresh, start somewhere new. If Keaton entered, he would get a lot of calls. He would get a lot of calls, and I think he would be a hot commodity. And I think, yeah, that'd be a chance for him to go out there, get some new tape, go in a different sort of offense. You know, we don't know what's going to happen there, but I wouldn't be surprised if that happened.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised, but I wouldn't be surprised if any number of players go in the transfer portal, because you just don't know what's going to happen with the coaching hire. You know, if a triple option coach comes in, then yeah, he's going to transfer. I think his best move is to wait, see what the offense is, see what the conversations are with the new coach, the new offensive coordinator, where they feel he's at. Are they looking for a dual threat guy? Are they looking for more someone like Jackson Dart? If not, you know, why would he not think that he can win the competition? You know, every fan thinks Jackson Dart's automatically better than him, but if you're a quarterback, you got to have confidence, so you should think that you can win that competition. So if you feel like you fit in the offense that's coming in, then I don't know that you would transfer unless you think there's a spot where you're going to have a better offensive line, better receivers. You know, if you can transfer to an Oklahoma type of program where, you know, usually the pieces around you are consistently really good, which they haven't actually been that great this year on the offensive line, but you know, that's what you would be looking for. Is there a place that's going to be better fitting that would help you boost yourself? Or are you going into a competition somewhere else and you got to prove yourself to people that don't know you, and you don't have a good connection with the wide receivers like you already, you know, should have with the USC ones? I think those are all the things that you're going to be weighing when you look at that decision. I don't think he's automatically the backup, so that's why I don't think you automatically look at the transfer portal. If he loses his job later this year, then yes.
Or he just goes where Harrell goes.
I mean, I think you could even improve your stock if you show what you can do in a different system, too. So, I mean, there's different ways to look at it, obviously. So, I mean, if he lights the world on fire the last five games, then you could say maybe he just enters the NFL draft. There's not a ton of good quarterbacks in this year. It's not a good class. So, you know, he might end up seeing his stock rise just because there's not a ton of talented quarterbacks across the nation this year, in my opinion.
Lots of options.
We got a question from Nathan who said, you may have already tackled this. Maybe it's a missed tackle. But do you think USC would have the same win-loss record had they allowed Helton to stay on and finish the season?
I like your little subtle missed tackle throw in there.
That was a stock down that I forgot to say. So,
would it be a different record?
I don't know that it would be any different. I mean, they probably handled the end of the half a little bit better there. But even if they score a touchdown there, it doesn't change the outcome of the game. So overall, I don't know that it would be anything drastically different. I don't know. It's hard to say. This team just is not as talented as some of the previous USC teams are, and they've struggled in certain areas. And, you know, it's been the same issues over and over, whether it was the first two games or you know, the last five games. So I don't feel like there's something that's been drastically different and you'd be like, oh, that's something that never happened under Clay Helton. So.
Yeah, I don't think there'd be a massive change. I don't think they'd be like 5-1 at this point or something, whatever. I think it'd be pretty similar to what we're seeing now.
Yeah. We got two coaching questions that I'm putting together. First one's from Rechan18, who said, if you had your pick of realistic coaches for USC, who would it be? And then we got a question from Eric who said, do you have a favorite head coach candidate based on how interesting he will make your jobs, i.e. crazy press conferences, willingness to do in-depth interviews, more access to practices, etc.? Interesting question.
I'll be honest with you.
Yes.
Didn't hear the first part of the first question. But for the second part, if you had to pick a
realistic coaches for USC, who would it be? That was the first question.
You're okay. Like pretty direct simple. Eye contact
That's
with me,
what
too.
I thought. I zoned out. For the second question, I don't really know enough about their practice habits or their practice media relationships or stuff like that or crazy interviews. Whatever the case, I expect the next head coach to give us less practice access. So I don't see anyone giving us more. In terms of like crazy interviews, I think Aranda would be fun. He seems a little intense, which I kind of like for some reason. I think he just seems like he only takes cold showers.
Is that how you say it? Aranda?
Aranda?
I thought it's Aranda. I don't know. I was just wondering.
Look, you do you, I do me.
Okay, go for it.
And then realistic options. My two favorite, did he say two?
Chris, where are you? if you had your pick of realistic coaches for USC, who would it be? The word two is not mentioned.
I heard two.
You've been told this question now three or four times and you're still struggling with it.
That's why I black it out. Just cut up something I said 2 weeks ago. Shotgun, you go. I'm done talking right now.
What's your answer?
Yeah, I'll think about it. You go.
Realistic, Aranda, I think, is doing a great job with Baylor. Defensive coach, Luke Fickle, I think because he has the experience at Ohio State, I think is very, very intriguing. Obviously winning with Les at Cincinnati, but also the experience recruiting to a major power like Ohio State, and he did really well there doing that. So I think those two kind of stand out to me. My unrealistic choice is still Nick Saban. I mean, if you got a choice, taking him. However, he would be terrible for the second question as a head coach. Though he does say some stuff that gets national attention.
He can give a good quote.
But we'd have to watch our verbiage.
But also, he doesn't allow basically anyone to be interviewed. No coordinators or coaches are allowed to be interviewed. No freshmen are allowed to be, I believe.
Also,
so
if we say Nick, would be horrible.
No. Let's just bring primetime in here.
No.
Let's get Coach Primetime.
So that's crazy. Crazy press conference. You never know what Deion's going to say. But I think Brett Bielema is also, I don't know that he's a USC candidate, but talk about interesting comments being made. Did you guys see what he said about his offensive lineman last week?
No.
Now it worked because they beat Penn State, but he was just basically like, we don't have anyone on the two deep that we would have recruited here, basically.
Yikes.
So basically just throwing under the bus whoever was the head coach previously. Like, I don't know what the hell they were doing, but I wouldn't have recruited any of these guys.
Yikes, Sereno.
But it worked. They beat a top 10 Penn State team in like 72 overtime. Very bad football game.
We were watching that in the car, and it was just like, make this game end, please.
Never would end.
Yeah. Chris, did you say anything about this, or did you just question it a million times?
I would have said Fickle and Campbell.
Okay. I think Aranda, Fickle, Campbell, kind of in the wheelhouse.
You're just going to throw out every hot name that's on the board?
Also,
2.5.
Mike Tomlin. Let's just.
I've heard the Mike Tomlin suggestion before, but then once Carson said it, I was like, huh, it's a good idea. I don't know why, like, the way he packaged it, I was like, huh, okay, I can see that. Yeah, I don't know. I think that's it for questions. And also, talking about the game, watching the Penn State game in the car made me realize we never did Herd It on the Sideline, so let's do some Herd It on the Sideline. Chrissy T, I know I already encroached on yours, so you have it ready. What do you got?
I don't want to go.
Why do you are so difficult?
She throws it to me, Shotgun. I'm throwing it to you.
It's like hot potato.
I thought it was very interesting listening to some of the Notre Dame photographers and media that were on the sidelines talking about Drake London. They were talking about Slovis. They're like, he looks at 15 every time. He really likes him. I'm like, no shit. You would really like him too if he was your wide receiver.
He likes him.
Yeah, he likes him. There's Drake London is just fantastic. But when you have opposing media that don't see him all the time, just kind of hear them kind of rave about him and be like, wow, this guy, he's always open. He has so many catches already. And he had like 8 catches for 102 yards in like the second quarter. But another phenomenal game for him, career high, 171 yards in that one. And another 15 catch performance, I think. I mean, he's on pace to break Marquise Lee's school record for catches. But it would help him if USC could, you know, win a couple of games so then become bowl eligible to help out his potential for stats as well.
Yeah. Also, as far as not like really recognizing the Drake London, the fans didn't know, I think, what he was capable of, because there was an early screen where there's a defender right there at the line of scrimmage and the whole crowd was like, yeah. And then Drake was like, bye. Like,
into the yard. Shrugged him off.
Yards after catch is just unreal for Mr. Drake London. My heard it on the stadium walk. Was on the way into the stadium. We actually timed it unintentionally where we had to wait for USC's band to pass us, and like some of the Notre Dame fans ran up because they were like, oh, it's, you know, the band. And one of the Notre Dame fans was like, because you know how they do, like, just like they do the little drum thing, they don't play any song. He was like, play the fight song. Why aren't you playing the fight song? And then one of the other Notre Dame fans was like, they played a million times. Just wait. So I thought that was funny. I had another security guard come up to me and was like, so you cover the team. Do you hear the fight song? Like, how do you put up with that? And I'm like, you don't really hear it at a certain point. So, yeah.
Keely knows I don't ever hear the music.
He doesn't hear anything. He didn't even notice that there are like yellow flowers bordering the stadium until
after the game was over.
And I pointed them out.
I was like, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. But also,
I understand what's in between those lines.
Shouts to the Midwestern hospitality. Always a fun time at Notre Dame. Everyone on the field is so great. And the Midwest fans, USC fans who come to the stadium and yell at me in shotgun, that's always fun too. So thank you to everyone for that. It's always fun.
Yeah, and their SIDs do a great job over there and take care of everything. And they have pizza in the press box afterwards.
Always pizza?
Pizza. Always a good choice.
No gluten-free, but it's fine. I'm not bitter.
Chris, what you got?
Getting ripped off, that's what I got.
Sorry.
Wow.
I laughed really hard at that. I'm sorry.
Obviously, I wasn't able to watch the game live, but I did get notifications about NBC apparently taking my photo that I tweeted on Tuesday's practice about Keyonte Ingram's fantastic reaction to finding out the temperature for Saturday's game. It's going to be in the low 40s, just a great expression. And they took my photo, didn't cite me, didn't do anything of that nature. So, yeah, that's kind of my heard it. I don't really have anything other to say than that. And that's pretty shiesty.
That's what you call some bullshit.
Yeah. I want to curse right now, but I'm just going to not do it.
Okay. Yeah, I thought that was pretty bold to just rip your photo and not. It's like, you got it somewhere. Come on.
You got it somewhere.
Come on.
And I just want to do a shameless plug.
Oh.
To follow us on TikTok at The Peristyle. I posted the entire clip on TikTok. And if you don't know what TikTok is, you're too old. Don't worry about it. You don't know what that is. So seriously, don't worry about it. But I posted on TikTok and it's gone a little bit viral. It's gone over 700,000 views.
Wow.
Over 48,000 likes.
Hey.
And we started with 5 followers when I posted that. We're approaching 400 right now.
Ayo.
So it has gotten very spicy over there. So if you are on TikTok, come follow us at The Peristyle, shameless plug. We got some cool stuff coming on there. Hopefully some pushing some content. So give us a follow. And go F yourself, NBC. How about that?
My goodness.
That's my heard it.
Audible heard it, or a bonus heard it, actually.
Bonus.
For you, Chris. I didn't tell you this because I wanted your reaction on.
Let's go.
It's not that exciting. So, Shaka and I are waiting, kind of just taking in observations when the final players are trickling out and going to the buses. And we see Isaiah Jackson Dart walk up to this guy. And I was like, you kind of know post-game, like, if someone's more important than other people just because, like, their skin looks nice or, like, they're dressed better. Yeah.
Skin looks
rich
nice.
People have really nice skin.
rich people are more important now, huh? Wow.
What?
You just said if someone's more important than you said rich people have nice skin.
But that's not transitive property.
That is transitive.
No, it isn't. And so I turn to Shotgun and I'm like, hey, who started talking to you? Like he seems important. And Shotgun's like, well, he's dressed really nice. Take this over. You take it.
I said, well, he's dressed really nice. He has some nice shoes on, nice suit. I was like, he's got an attractive wife. There's a couple kids there. One-on-one Notre Dame stuff on. So I was like, is this like an agent type of thing? Is this like someone from the Notre Dame administration or something? And we were kind of at the profile view, so we couldn't really tell. And then the person turned, and we're like, oh, that's Drew Brees.
We felt like complete idiots.
Drew Brees, you didn't see the birthmark?
That was on the other side, so we couldn't
gotcha. See it. We would have gotcha. Definitely would have recognized that. Yes.
Is he taller than Drew Brees?
Jackson Dart, yes.
Okay. That's
Drew Brees is very small.
That's partially what threw me off. I thought he would be much bigger. No. I was like, his career's even more impressive now that I've seen him in person because he's tiny.
They call him Tyler Brees for a reason. I mean me.
It's why he jumped when he throws most of the time. Right. A little hop into it to get a little extra inch.
Unreal. Before I pass it to you, Chrissy T, for take it or leave it.
I got a bonus one, too.
Oh, of course you do.
When we were interviewing the players and stuff, talking to Brett and Elon, and asked about the red zone inefficiencies that USC has had all season, but in this Notre Dame game, he says, it seems like we're allergic to the end zone at times. And I was like, whoa, That's true. That's what it is. It's true. It feels like they're allergic to the end zone. They just can't get in there. And that's been killing them all season. But I thought it was a kind of a bold quote from Brett and Elon to admit that, because, you know, I think a lot of fans would agree with that sentiment. But to hear it from the players, and I think that tells you how frustrated they are by the situation as well.
Yeah. I mean, but to be fair, Brett and Elon has had some good quotes after losses. I remember after the Oregon game last year, he was like, or last year or 2 years ago, he was like, it was like blitzkrieg when that all fell apart. So he's had some good quotes, some honest quotes. Chrissy T, before I pass it to you for some take it or leave it, we have a last minute comment/question that came in. It's from Steven. I don't think that's his real name because it's Steven Taylor's version, which is a song. But we'll go with Steven for now. He says, with the greatest of respect, why does Chris sound silky smooth when he does instant analysis, but the voice sounds like literal gravel when doing a Family Feud? # he should still be permanent. # stock neutral. So obviously.
You just read this so I get roasted on the podcast?
I mean, I agree with it. You know, as your producer, that I do have an issue with your jazz voice, but it's fine. It's fine.
My jazz voice?
You're just like, it's like, I call it your back voice. It's like you talk like this and, you know. Explain to the people.
I really don't understand the difference.
Which,
like, is this
weird.
My back voice right now?
Yeah.
And then what's my front voice?
You think,
hi, I'm Chris. Is that too front for you?
You Pinocchio.
Is that what you want, Steve? I'll do the whole goddamn read with that if you want.
Oh, why are you fronting?
No.
Okay, pick one.
Do your instant voice.
Gravel or Pinocchio? Pick one. That's the only lines I got.
Just do your instant voice right now.
I don't know what that. Do the line then.
What?
Do the opening.
For USCFootball.com, I'm Keely O'Hare, because we know for instant analysis of Family Feud.
Hey, Keely. It was.
Yep. It does sound different.
All right, I guess.
Okay. On that note, time for some take it or leave
Wait,
it.
Wait, he's saying I'm silky smooth on instant.
Yeah. Literal gravel
but
right
a,
now.
But a bag of dead cats on this.
He said literal gravel, which I would. Agree. Sorry.
Wow, he just played us off.
He just gave us the wrap up.
That never happens.
I know. Come on, Shotty. Now you know how we feel. Chris, it's time for some take it or leave it. Go for it.
Guys, October is almost over.
We did Halloween candy last week.
Yeah, exactly. Spooky season's almost over. I actually forgot to write the intro for this. This is all off the dome right now.
Oh, gosh.
What's going on this weekend, guys?
Halloween.
It's fucking Halloween, guys. Okay. And as you know, we've been pretty busy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we haven't been able to get the costumes. And since we've been so busy, mm-hmm. I'm sure a lot of other people are busy with their lives. And they haven't also been able to go out and get costumes. So that's why, thanks to our fake corporate sponsor for the week, Spirit Halloween Store.
Oh,
who are putting out limited edition Paris-style costumes.
What an honor.
Of you guys and of the team. I'm not an official member, so I don't get an official costume.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, my actual, you know, like when you go in the store and it says like scary clown, it's knockoff. Mine is unofficial podcast member. Hispanic unofficial podcast member. That's what mine says.
What do you wear
for? You guys are branded. We're not getting to that right now.
Okay.
We do. We can walk you through some of these costumes for the ladies. I know we have some lady fandoms.
Lady fandoms.
You have the Keeley costume.
Oh, no.
It comes with a Keeley sweater, a boots, a mic, and a play phone full of sources. It will buzz intermittently with scoops throughout the party. We have a couple lines you can do for that. I'm going to read a couple off the list they gave me. You can do the classic, you can do, I think I'm going to teave it. Or you can do stock neutral baby and watch all the eye rolls.
Yeah.
Obviously, Shottington, this one's easy. You just get with accessories because all you got to do is put on the dress suit, the dress pants, some sneakers, your favorite baseball cap, whatever it is. The more interesting, the better.
Backwards.
But this one comes with a pack of Monster.
Yep.
A nifty participation chart and a nice little tuft of hair wig. We throw that in for you, baby. It even comes with a little beard if you want to throw the beard. If you want to go quarantine shotgun.
Oh.
Yeah, so you get the option there. We got our own little catchphrases for him to catch the damn ball, of course. Always favorite.
That is a shotgun line for
we
sure.
Got a whoa.
Whoa.
There. And then the always favorite, I'll be brief. And then just don't be brief, yeah. Obviously.
Talk for the next hour.
Take Halloween, give it a USC twist, and leave everyone talking about your spooky season fit. Spirit Halloween, don't worry, it will be an abandoned Radio Shack storefront in about 3 weeks. So thank you to Spirit Halloween. Go pick those up. There are not a lot in stock, limited edition. Gerard Martinez, only 5 of those, so got to go find them. Yeah.
Wow.
So thank you,
Spirit Halloween. What are his
catchphrases? Right now, I do not have that list.
Okay, sorry.
I do not have that list. Something about video games. Something video games.
YouTube.
No, IRL. You know, yeah, he's live blogs and IRL.
Live blogs and IRL.
Sure. Yeah. Okay.
Let's get into these. Jackson Dart will start against Arizona.
Ay.
Leave it.
I'm going to leave it because I don't think it's him starting time.
Okay.
This week. That's not a real sentence, but you know what I mean.
Some people think that it's going to happen because they're like, oh, Arizona's the team you would want him to face so he can get confidence and blah, 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 blah.
It's just such a big move to do that. Like, you then signal Keaton, you're kind of, your future at USC is kind of
true
over. So I don't know.
USC has had 2 decommitments in the last 2 weeks or so, 3 since the firing of Clay Helton. USC will have a top 25 class in 2022. We'll finish with a top 25 class.
So new coach has been there for like 9 months?
No.
Class
no,
of
2022. Oh, I hate this. No, leave it.
I'm going to take it. I think there's going to be some fire from whoever comes in. They're going to pick up some stuff that people will be surprised by.
Pick up some stuff.
Plus, Devin Brown keeps climbing up the rankings and helping their class spot out.
USC will be playing for bowl eligibility against BYU. You could think about what that means.
I'm going to take it.
Take it.
Oh, interesting.
Okay, that was creepy.
Drake London will have at least 10 touchdowns this season.
He's at what, 5 now?
He's at 5 right now.
Really, he's at 5?
He's not like a big touchdown guy. One more will be his career high.
Well, they tried to throw it to him before the play before both the rushing touchdowns this past game. So
yes.
One screen, he got to the 2-yard line, they gave it to Barlow. The other one, they threw it to him on the right side. It was a little bit too high. I'm going to take it.
Take it.
I think you're getting to the point in the season where you're like, all right, what do we take away from this season? Let's get the ball to Drake. Boost those stats to make sure he can win the Biletnikoff. He deserves this. Let's see what we can do to help out him in that way. So I think you're going to see, especially if you're like Arizona, like similar to what they did with Amon Ross St. Brown against Washington State, like we need to get this guy a little bit more involved, and you get find four touchdowns for him. And they did some different things to get him involved in that game last year. So I think that maybe in Arizona is a team where you can get multiple scores.
He just did the thing where he convinces me, so I'm going to take it.
Let's stay on the London train. London will be a top 15 pick.
What was that one, Raw?
Second round.
See, that's why it's like...
Third round.
Third round? Third
it's
round.
Weird.
Third or fourth. I think it's third, but third.
Where is he in the mocks? Can I cheat?
He is like 23, 21 right now. Mel Kiper just came out and put him as his number four prospect on his big board.
Big Whoa. Board. So I'm going to take it.
Oh, you're believing the Kipe?
Oh. I'm on Ross
Kipe. Kipe. Like the Kipe? Oh, okay, there you go.
Yeah. Was fourth round. Yeah. You're correct. Third
Thank
day.
You. Thank you.
Michael Pittman was second round.
He will not last to the fourth round, I will tell you that.
No. I'm gonna leave it though.
Okay.
Oh.
I just don't know that he creates enough separation consistently for teams to take. Like some of the top end receivers you see, he does so many things and is gonna be able to be used as a weapon. But I feel like teams are gonna look at it and be like, does he have the speed, the top end speed that we want of a top 15 to take a wide receiver in the top 15? Because you can oftentimes find receivers a little bit later in the draft, like an Amon Ross St. Brown in the fourth round.
Absolutely right. Keonta Ingram will make the all Pac-12 teams. Not honorable mention, because I don't really care about honorable mention. He is number four in the Pac-12 in rushing right now.
There's three Pac-12 teams?
I believe it's two.
I don't remember. The Pac-12, I know in basketball they put 15 people on the first team. Which is like literally like, oh, we're going to create a roster.
Right.
This is the all Pac-12 roster.
I think that's okay. I'm not upset at that.
I'm not happy with that.
Fair enough.
I don't know how many they put on there, but I think he will end up being on there. I think they're going to rely on the run more and more. It's slowly but surely going that way. And when they do, the offense is better. So I'm going to take it.
No, I'll take it.
Okay.
I mean, especially with C.J. Verdell being injured.
That is true.
That's a good point.
Jalen McKenzie will take back his starting spot this week.
Spicy.
I like the spice.
Sometimes
Get me
Chris,
off this mic. I just need it.
Sometimes Chris does things, and immediately after he finishes, he just like shakes his head in disappointment at himself. That was one of those moments. So I just had to visual bit that or describe it. Now, in talking to Clay McGuire, he is still high on Jalen McKenzie. He just wanted consistency from him in both pass pro and the run one. So I think, forgot him. I'm going
to
take it.
Oh, she was about to talk herself out of it.
I'm going to take it.
I'm going to leave it. I think they're going to try to get Monheim's confidence back against a team like Arizona that doesn't have the quality of depth at the pass rush position.
Interesting.
That's a good point, actually.
We'll see. We'll see.
We shall see.
That's about it.
Wow.
That's about it.
Wow.
And let's jump into the fun ones. Again, shout out to Spirit Halloween.
Yeah. They're
probably like starting to pack it up all up.
Because right
they're
now.
About to be done. So go out there, grab your Keeley costume, your shotgun costume, your Gerard Martinez costume, or even your Ryan Abraham, which is just swim shorts and a volleyball. That's all it is.
Wow. Nice.
That's all it is.
Is there any sunscreen?
Nope.
Wait, what's the generic podcast unofficial member? What does that involve?
What does that involve? What do you mean?
It's like just like terps everywhere. I feel like that's pretty specific.
Yeah, it's just a like those bodysuits. It's Marilyn.
Oh, okay.
That's all it is.
That makes sense.
That's okay. All it is. We have it on theme, sort of like the candy one we did, but I do have a random one that I was very excited to show you. I'm going to DM it to you right now because no amount of words can justify what I'm describing. So very quickly, you are taking or leaving. Just sent it to you. The Balloon World Cup.
my gosh, I saw this earlier. I'm so taking it. I used to do this as a kid with my sister.
Who didn't do this as a kid is my question.
Yeah.
I'm taking it. I do really enjoy the setup that they had. I thought that was the most interesting part.
Very quickly, can you describe what it is?
So the Balloon World Cup is, you know, basically who can pop a balloon up in the air.
Not pop it. It's like keep it up.
Keep it up, yeah. Bump it up in the air. And it's one-on-one battle. You're going against someone else, and you can't hit the balloon downward. It has to be hit upward. But the room that they're in,
I love it.
The landscape that they're in, is very interesting. There's couches, there's a car, there's tables, there's like a old Galaga game or something. I don't know which game it is there, but there's a lot of different things. So the car gets used the most because it's the hardest to get around. But the players are all wearing helmets, which I think is very interesting because some of these are dives over tables and they're hitting themselves.
Because we know you're very into head and spinal cord.
You're into big neck and head injury. And that table looks like it has no padding on the side. It looks pointy.
Yeah. Yeah, this looks like it could be
dangerous.
It's
real out here.
So it's very interesting. You know, it's basically, can you get it over the car before... I wonder what the rules are on blocking out and different things like that.
I think you just get out of the way.
Imagine the film study on this. You're like, oh, man, he always hits the balloon over this. And you're like, that's intense.
Choosing when to hit the balloon. You wait till it gets to the bottom. You know, there's a lot of different strategies in this, but it seems very interesting. I saw this a couple weeks ago and thought it was pretty hilarious to see how hard these guys were working and that I would not do well in it.
Would you do it?
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Sure, I would beat Keeley, but...
You two versus each other is what
I would beat him sideways all the time. What's that phrase?
Beat him sideways.
Left, right, and Sunday. Something of that.
Yeah.
What?
Clearly Nailed my brain it. Isn't working
Nailed
today.
Nailed it.
Yeah, it wouldn't be working on Balloon World Cup either against me.
Hello, all right. I trained for this as a child. You're going down. You're 80. I can do this.
As we know, every year there's costumes that come out in October that kind of represent the year that has happened, pop culture, memes, things that have happened this year. So we're just going to run through 10. And you're going to tell me if you take it or leave these 2021 relevant costumes.
Oh, no. Right.
I need clarification, as in take it or leave that I would wear it, or take it or leave that it's a good
costume?
Like
if you saw it at the party, would you be like, I like that costume. I mess with that.
Got it.
Okay. This one's a little more recent. Squid Game characters.
I haven't seen it.
Leave it. Don't know anything about it.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Though, didn't there a USC connection there, I believe, with the creator of it?
I believe so, yes.
So it is relevant. The Bernie Sanders cold meme.
Which one is that one?
Sitting in the chair, all bundled up.
That was 2020. Oh, yeah, my gosh. Was that 2021 because it was inauguration?
Yes.
This year is a lifetime. I'm going to leave it. It's kind of old.
Dang it.
He is old, yes.
No, the meme itself.
So if you saw someone just chilling at a party, just like mittened up, bundled up.
If they're acting it out well, then I'm taking it.
Okay, gotcha. Then maybe, yeah.
Kim K at the Met Gala.
Leave it. I don't know anything about it. Oh, this is the all black just shadow person.
Yes.
I'm going to take it just because I think it would be hilarious to see.
I'm still leaving it.
Still leaving it. Okay.
I would think it was someone's shadow, like Peter Pan.
Wow.
Hook.
Olivia Rodrigo's album cover, Sour.
I think I might do that for Halloween because I want to put stickers on my face.
Leave it. I don't know what this is.
Once again, he's old. Continue. No offense to anyone who else doesn't get it. You're not old. I just want to insult Shotgun and Shotgun only.
Mm-hmm, sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Way to talk to our listeners like that.
A COVID vaccine.
How?
You can create something.
Okay. I'll leave it.
I'll leave it.
Too much of the world.
Eh. Too much of the world.
I mean, like, we've seen it so, it's like so much.
Too heartbreaking.
Among Us characters.
Ooh, that's fun. Chris and I played Among Us. There's a stretch of play, period, where we played it a lot.
Don't know what Sean about.
He had no clue. He had no clue. So you're taking it?
Shotgun's kind of sus. I'll take it.
I don't know. It's almost like I've been invested in, you know, watching this
team.
Here
we go. Oh, my God. That, we were doing that in the off season. So nice try.
The Suez Canal ship.
I don't know how this would be done, but I would take
just
it.
Like,
just
like just block the corridor of every party. Just like, I'm sorry. We're backed up. Can't get to the bathroom.
I think that'd be funny. Take it.
I'll take it just for, I want to see how it's executed.
The billionaire space race. So Jeffrey Bezos and all those guys in those blue suits for the, whatever the thing is, blue.
Leave it.
Leave it. For rich people.
Who have better skin.
Apparently.
I mean, if I
and are better than us.
I didn't say that. That's okay. What I heard. Continue.
Olympic gold medalist.
Yeah, I'll take that.
Meh. I mean, it's tried and true. It's fine. It's not like you can't do it every single year or every 4 years if you want.
And finally, yes, an NFT.
But how would you dress up as that?
Look.
Don't question
I'm
it.
Not. It's just however you want to do it.
Just assuming that someone did it well, I would take it.
Sure, I'll take it.
Well, that's creative. And then I'd be like, I would never do that.
He was like pleasantly surprised.
And that is the fun ones.
And what?
Whoa.
Well,
I was ready.
Yes. And since this is the last time we'll see each other before Halloween.
I didn't even realize Halloween was this weekend.
Yeah. That's how into it you are.
Someone said something to me. I was like, wait, when is that? What weekend is that? Oh, this week. Oh, this weekend. Oh. Do I have to be a part of that?
Do I have to be a part of that?
I just want a quick Halloween story, memory, anything, you know, something. What was your first costume? What was the costume really excited about? Do you have a crazy trick-or-treating story? Were you a kid who didn't like trick-or-treating? Did you give away your candy? Did you hustle your candy at school? Anything related to Halloween?
Wow, wow, wow!
I'm stalling so you guys can think about it.
Thank
you. For reference, I was a cow for my first Halloween.
Nice.
I had udders. Think about that. You could have milked me at a little party. At a little party. It was a little like a little toddler party. Okay. It was a bunch of babies. Little babies.
Okay. With toddler Drew Brees.
Yes, with toddler Drew Brees. Does anyone have anything?
My first Halloween costume, I was a bunny. It was crocheted by my grandma.
Oh.
And I looked very cute. Also, to give you just a little teaser into, you know, the world that is Keely Orr that's not really known, I'm just going to say one of my Halloween costumes one year, I dressed up as a character with my friends who dressed up as other characters from Naruto. That's all I'm going to say. Chris's face.
From what?
It's anime.
Oh.
Were you, what's her face?
No.
The blonde one?
No. Oh, she's annoying.
My favorite costume I've ever been was I was a blue man.
From Blue Man Group?
From Blue Man Group.
Did the paint get everywhere?
It was a group costume with three other girls that were Blue Man groupies. So they wore all white and we put blue handprints all over everything.
Oh no.
Which was hilarious. So it was great.
Interesting.
And I didn't have to talk all night, so it was great. Chris, you would love it.
How old were you?
This was when I was out here. So
question: would you have let me been a groupie?
Yes,
absolutely. This question was inspired just by Shotgun being bummed he couldn't do a Captain Planet group costume.
Very true. I've always wanted.
He went a different blue, different shade of blue. Okay.
Is there one costume that you had to wear multiple years?
Just because I like doing it, Power Rangers.
Which color?
I was White Ranger one year, and then I think I was Gold Ranger.
A Gold Ranger.
Gold Ranger. And probably Red Ranger at one point.
Wow.
Yeah.
As a girl, if you never have a idea and it's last minute, you're like, I'll be a princess again. Like, it's just like, this is what happens.
I'll be a princess. Yeah, we just were like, don't have a costume. All right, grab a sheet and you got a toga. Go for it.
Boom.
My dad made me a little crown with twigs and stuff, and I just went with it.
Me you.
Twigs.
Nice.
Then I was like, I'm just going to use that next year.
That's going to be next year.
Well, everybody have a safe and joyous Halloween.
When's that again?
Sunday.
Sunday.
Is that it, Chrissy T?
That is it for me.
This is the most mid-season podcast of a losing season I've ever heard. It's just like we're just very, you know, it is what it is, I feel like. It is
wow.
What it is.
It is what it is.
What it is.
What it is, though.
This weekend is homecoming, I believe, for USC.
That's true. Congrats for you guys.
Well, I have the rectangle.
I don't know what that means. This is my 10th year, actually.
Congrats. What happens if I just keep talking and you... Like, you're not going to forcibly remove me from this podcast.
Security?
I mean, you have control over the editing anyway, so...
Right.
True.
You do whatever you want.
Alrighty, that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Family Feud podcast. That's Shotgun. I'm Keely. That's Chris. I almost forgot you, and I'm sorry. We'll see you all next week. Bye!
Notice how it worked. She ended it.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.